You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God does there. I am your host, Joe Epley, and I am delighted today to be able to interview a couple pastors and friends of mine, Alan and Colleen Schaberg. They've had a wonderful ministry journey, most recently serving as superintendents of the Wyoming Network Council, the Assemblies of God. And so I'm excited to dive into their stories today and just hear about their journeys and their educational discoveries and what they've done as both as pastors and superintendents. And so the first thing I want to say is, Pastor Alan, Colleen, how are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Yes. Thank you for having us.
Awesome. Well, yeah, we're glad to have you guys. I was excited to be able to reach out to you and learn a bit more about your story, because even though, you know, we've been in the same orbit, you never really dig deep into someone's life, you know, as often as you could. And so I think today will be a great chance for me and for our listeners just to get to know you guys better and hear some of the lessons that you pulled from ministry. So what we always start with is we love to let people, again, dial in on your story, on your ministry journey. And so either one of you can start, but I'd love to hear your ministry journey and kind of your connection specifically to the rural church. And so actually, for the sake of it, Alan, why don't we start with you, man, and then we'll go to Colleen.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I came to Christ later in life as a high school senior. And so we got married young in 1982. Whoa. And then we graduated from Central Bible College in 1989, and we'd already had our first two kids. We were a youth pastor first, and then we had three lead pastorates. Two of those, I would say, were very rural, Bayard, Nebraska, a community of about 1,300, and then Buffalo, Wyoming, is about 4,000, and we served there for 13 years before coming to the network office. And obviously, superintendent of Wyoming, almost everything is rural. All of our churches are in small communities, small churches.
I think it's funny that you say almost everything, because there's some zip codes in the U.S. where I'm just like, yeah, you said you're from Wyoming. Doesn't matter how big the town is, actually. You know, we're rural people. You know what I'm saying? Continue
for
on.
Sure.
That's right. And, you know, God has been so gracious and faithful to us. I would say he definitely called us and directed us to each of those communities and contexts. And it's been just a high calling to lead and care for people. So, you know, I think of rural ministry kind of with that quote, long obedience in the same direction.
I love that. Nice. Colleen, what about you?
Well, Joe, I'm actually a fourth generation EGPK. So I literally was born into the small local church. Well, maybe not literally, but almost. But I've been immersed in that lifestyle for my entire life. And yeah, rural pastors are some of my heroes. I think they are some of the most diverse, adaptable, resourceful people that I know. In fact, I like to think of it as I feel like they're very multifaceted. So, you know, just like a stone that has those facets on it. I mean, I just feel like the cuts and the things that they do, all the different things that they do, which are many, really cause them to reflect Christ and to be brilliant, in a sense, brilliant people with the fire of the Holy Spirit being reflected in their lives because of all the different dimensions that a small local church pastor has to deal with.
Very nice. Yeah, I love that. And I know that actually we've had some people on the podcast that are kind of fall under your jurisdiction. You know, we've had some Wyoming pastors here before. And so people can check back. We did a wonderful series on bivocational ministers, and I know that we got to hear from some Wyoming voices at that time. So our listeners can check that out. But man, what a journey, you know, multiple pastorates, multiple small towns, obviously fourth generation looking into ministry. And this is going to be a fun conversation. So you both mentioned pastoral soul care, kind of this idea of, yeah, taking care of people, not just saying, hey, we'll pray for you, but just really diving into it as a mutual passion. So each of you in your own words, and Colleen, we'll probably start with you just to keep the order, you know, rotating. But can you kind of define what you mean by pastoral soul care and give pastors advice on how to put it into practice?
Well, I can try to. This is something that we speak on frequently, and I usually kind of give the introduction or the description of soul
Perfect.
Care. So I'll just dive into that first of all. But I feel like the soul is the very life center of a human. We're not just a self, we're actually the soul. And the soul is the part of us that integrates the mind, the will, and the body. So it's very important that we keep our souls healthy, right? That makes sense. Dallas Willard, who has a lot to say on soul care, he has a great quote. And he says, you are a soul made by God, made for God, and made to need God, which means you were not made to be self-sufficient. So to have a healthy soul, I feel like we have to have a relationship with God. And I mean a legit relationship, not just something that we think we have or talk about, but a real relationship with God. And I think that our soul's health is really found in his presence.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Alan, over to you, sir.
Well, I'll just say to start out, and then I can go back to Colleen if she'd like to interject.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can definitely bounce back and forth a little bit for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of humorously, soul care is taking care of your soul.
Love that.
Pastors give a ton of attention, as we all know, to leading others and managing the ministry of the local church. Giving of themselves to others. But sometimes we don't give as much attention or enough attention to receiving in ways, various ways from God and others to keep ourselves healthy and whole. So that's a great concern of mine, that pastors are not taking care of themselves well enough under the guise of just continuing to do ministry all the time. And we know also that leading pastoral ministry, rural ministry, bivocational ministry, it leads to tons of challenges and heartbreak, betrayal. Sometimes we're leading on empty. And I think if we do that and we're not taking care of ourselves enough, our soul, then, you know, we find ourselves starting to get angry and cynical and discouraged and tired. And so soul care obviously is tied to that idea. And so I'll stop there and I can talk a little bit more about how I think we should take care of our soul.
Yeah, absolutely. Back to Colleen. Let's dive just a little deeper into it. What are some more of your thoughts?
Well, I try to explain the soul by using circles. So if you think of a target, which has the rings of a circle,
sure.
In the very middle, we find the will, which I'm thinking of the will as like a form of energy. So you can drive, you can stretch, you can push it. And also the will is your capacity to choose. Although it is central, remember, it's in the middle there.
Sure.
It is also limited. So, Joe, your will is good at making very simple or significant commitments, like who you're going to marry, where you're going to live, but it's not so good at overriding habits or patterns or attitudes.
Interesting.
And you can exhaust yourself when you try to improve your soul with just your willpower. So that's will is at the center. But technically, your will was made to rule the body. So when you have sin in your life or even just troublesome thoughts, your will can become enslaved to the body. And I have this wonderful example that I had with some of my friends that kind of shows people, kind of how all the will, the body, the mind, all those directly relate to the soul. So I was wanting some friends of mine to come over, and we were making actually something for the pastors here in our network. So they were going to come over and help me. And usually when these two come over, we like to have tea together. And a lot of times we have cookies with it. I mean, I'm kind of humorously known as the cookie monster. I love baking cookies.
I love this. I am on board with what you're saying so far. Yes. It resonates with my soul.
Yes. So. So I texted my two friends and I'm like, hey, I'm going to stop by Crumble Cookie on the way. You know, what kind would you like? Blah, blah, blah. Well, my friend Margo said, hey, you know, we've been to the doctor this morning and she mentioned to us that we really need to start kicking sugar. So we're actually, you go ahead, get your cookie. We know how important this is to you, but we're just going to bring a sugar-free snack over. So, I mean, hey, these are some of my best friends. So I'm like, no, I'm just going to forgo the cookie. I don't need it. I'm going to have a healthy snack.
Sure.
So, you know, I was looking out for their souls here.
Yeah.
But when I got off the phone, these troublesome thoughts began in my head. I mean, I don't want to participate in tempting them, but I am the cookie monster, right?
Right, right.
So I don't need cookies, but wait a minute, maybe I do. They're going to understand me. They know that. So this is what I'm talking about when my will was enslaved to my body. So actually what happened was I went to my fridge and I had two peanut butter balls before they got there. And then I actually reached for one more. So that's kind of shows you how things in our minds and our wills and our bodies, they kind of need to be in harmony. They need to be working together. Mm. My body wanted that sugar and my will said, do it. But my mind was in a turmoil. Mm. So now my mind has to rationalize the decision to feel good about myself. And so this is how I think we can relate. Because of troublesome thoughts, we want to do what's right, but we don't. You know, Jesus is famous for saying the spirit is willing, but the flesh or the body is weak. Mm. But God wants my will, what I choose, under his connection to direct my mind and my body. So that is the will. Now, the mind just refers to our thoughts and our feelings. So that's that second circle in our target that we're talking about. And the mind has this endless ability to think and to feel. There's constantly things going on in our minds. And a lot of times these patterns get ingrained and our wills can't always redirect it. The mind always craves peace. Paul actually said, the mind governed by the flesh is death, but the mind governed by the spirit is life and peace. So that's the second circle. The third one is our bodies. Or our own little kingdoms, if you will. And our bodies have these appetites and habits. It has demands that are made on it. We outsource behaviors to our bodies so our minds or our wills won't have to worry about them. We tell our body to brush our teeth every day. Or so we outsource these different things to our bodies. But if we're in the right connection to God, our body is actually obediently serving the mind and the will. So that's the third. So then encompassing these three very important parts of us is the soul.
Oh, sure.
So it is what integrates all these things. But Joe, the nature of the soul is to need. The soul desires to orbit around something other than itself. It wants to worship something. It's the capacity to integrate all these things. It wants harmony, connection, integration. This is one of the reasons why the word integrity is actually a soul word. Mm. So your soul integrates your will or your intentions or your choices, your mind, which is your feelings, your conscience, your values, and your body into a single life where sin would be disintegrating. So just another thought is our world has replaced the soul with self, which is not the same thing. And we do use these terms kind of back and forth, but I don't want them to be misunderstood. But the more we actually focus on ourselves, we can actually neglect our souls. So the soul is healthy when harmony exists in that will and that mind and that body.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's really great.
To add to that.
No, I love that. I just love the idea that even what you said, the soul has to orbit around something. And so if I'm not strongly connected with God, well, then the will, the mind, you know, the body, these all get out of whack. And I love that thought. So Pastor Alan, let's turn it back over to you. What does that look like practically to do soul care in our lives?
Well, I think in a overview, the soul, the integrity of the soul is dependent upon its connection to God, obviously. So I guess in a sense, what I'm thinking of is that the greater unity or oneness, I use the term quite a bit, loving union with Jesus on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis, then the soul is healthier, obviously. So in other words, you can't have a healthy soul if you're not in the presence of God, if you're not connected to Him. And we know disciplines, right? And disciplines are important. The other thing I'll add to that, though, and we'll get to Sabbath a little bit later, is rhythms. The rhythms of life, of course, daily, weekly, monthly. And I think most pastors do spend time with the Lord every day, and they pray, and they have devotions and so forth. And that's obviously very important, because your life cannot be consumed with just church stuff and leading and growing a church. You can't do that. So the thing that I think is important that we learn to continue to find ways to be more conscious of God, more united with Him, more spent, you know, praying without ceasing, just in the sense of we're aware of God's presence and we're drawing close to Him. But I think we have to have some practical things. And one of the things that I added to my morning time with the Lord in recent years was afternoon coffee with Jesus. So I just put it in my schedule for the day as an appointment, you know, like 3 o'clock, get some coffee, get alone, spend 5-10 minutes. I usually listen to Psalm 23 and I just assume I'm sitting there with Jesus and we're having coffee together, and I slow down and I connect with Him. The other thing that I do is that I've added is evening before we go to bed, we listen to Lectio 365. It's a great app. They have a morning devotion, an evening devotion. But I also take communion personally some nights before I go to bed. And so I just get out the saltines and I get out some grape juice. I go get along with God. Often listen to Isaiah 53, the prophecy about the Messiah and just His suffering for us. And I think as pastors, we got to find those rhythms to keep connected to the Lord.
Yeah. And I really love that you use the word rhythm as something that's beyond discipline, because again, like to read our Bible, to pray, these are important things, but like most of us would argue that I tended, at least for me, to downplay maybe the importance of doing it at the same time or trying to find something stable. And so I'd be like, well, one night I'm up till 3 a.m. and this happens to be when I connect with you, you know? And like, I think that's functional, but it certainly can start to feel like God is an afterthought or, you know, like I've noticed that, like, you know, and this isn't to make one more right or the other, because I think you can focus either way. But for me, I feel like the Lord has specifically said, hey, take your morning and say these prayers and go through this kind of rhythm. And then if I miss that, like, it doesn't hit the same when I then at 4 o'clock, when the majority of my decision making and work is done, that I then decide to pray over my day, you know, it hits different. So I love that you use the word rhythms. Even beyond just a discipline of just like, oh yeah, I can muster the willpower to go read my Bible, but am I making that a stable rhythm, however that looks in our lives? That's really cool.
One other quick thing I'd say is, as a pastor for many years, I was into what I would call almost like power prayers. Like I was praying about revival. I was praying, I was trying to break down strongholds. I would, you know, and that's fine. But I think that the longer I've lived, the older I've gotten, my perspective has changed. I am definitely more self-reflective, contemplative, but I think my prayers and some of my scriptures that I pray over myself, and even some stages of things that I pray about are more, they're more related to soul care and connecting to God's, connecting to his presence and how I want him to come into my life and continue to transform me by the renewing of my mind.
I love that. I might also add something here too, Joe. And like, we are both very passionate about soul care, but two things that I was thinking of when Al was sharing was, so we do have those disciplines built in, but also we're intentional about bringing the Lord down into the everyday. So I think of, in Wyoming terms, that lasso. So I'm lassoing God and I'm bringing him down into my everyday. So when I'm sitting at a stoplight, yes, we have a few of them. When I'm sitting at a stoplight, or even like Al mentioned, he has just, you know, little minutes of time, but we are cognizant, oh, wow, God is right here with me. I can acknowledge him right now. So we're not just slamming through the day trying to get as much done, but we are very intentional about pulling him down and conversing with him or thinking about him during the day in different times. And then I also want to mention during those times, the importance of listening. I think this is something that, and we're talking about soul care here, this is something that has to be developed, and it's kind of a foreign concept, and not just listening to God, but Dr. Alicia Britt Scholl, she has a term that she says, generous listening. And I love that, not only with people, which we should generously listen to people. Sure. And that means we are engaged with them. But what about God? We need to be generously listening to God. And that has, you know, Al will talk about our journey with Sabbath later, but that is a big part of it, has become, or being comfortable with silence, with thinking, with learning how to listen to God. Very important for soul care.
Very nice. Well, speaking of Sabbath, I do want to, so one thing that our listeners might not know is you guys both had the opportunity to complete a master's program and a master's thesis through Trinity Bible College and Graduate School, which, as always, if people want in our show notes, we'll have the link to those programs. But I do want to dive into each of your individual kind of works in terms of your last project or your thesis. And so, Pastor Allen, I know that yours was about Sabbath. And then, Colleen, I know yours was about intergenerational ministry. And both of these things, I think, are very applicable to the rural church especially. Again, we're going to say, of course, to any pastor anywhere. But in small towns, yeah, what is the idea of Sabbath, especially when you feel like you're kind of on all the time as you just go about your day? And then intergenerational ministry, to some, is a luxury, but in a rural church is a necessity that you have to kind of include everybody that you can. And so, Alan, starting with you, you know, maybe take the next few minutes for us and just talk through the main takeaways from your thesis. And really, because we love to be practical, how does a pastor in a rural place try and practice Sabbath well?
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff here, but I'll just try to, I'll try to summarize some of it. Obviously, the Lord told us, you know, to remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy. So it's obviously to be a different and separate from kind of the rest of the week, what those look like. I think that's one of the biggest challenges for pastors is, you know, they might try to take a day off, but they're still doing some of the same things that they do the other 6 days in terms of maybe, you know, running errands and taking care of stuff. So I think the challenge is to choose a day, especially as a pastor, it's not Sunday, but you choose a day and you focus on how can you make it look different and how can you take care of your soul? How can you connect to him better? One takeaway is that it's a gift that God has given to us within that 7 day rhythm. And so it's that one day in seven as a rhythm where you're really taking time to connect and worship. So the four pieces of it that people can learn and then begin to try to figure out what that looks like in that 24 hour period is to cease, which is kind of what Sabbath means, to cease or to stop. And that means, you know, to stop all kinds of work, paid and unpaid. And then rest, it's kind of like taking a deep breath, a deep, deep breath once a week. So to rest, reflect and worship, being grateful for the blessings of God, and then rejoicing or celebrating. And that's a key piece that we've kind of had to learn. Yeah. And one quick example of that would be, okay, so if we're going to celebrate that God loves us and he's given himself to us or we're with him, this is a gift to us. We're going to celebrate his grace and love. So we're going to, if we do go out to eat, we're not going to worry about the price tag and we're going to get dessert. And a lot of times we get our blizzards on that day.
There you go.
Yeah. So that's kind of some overview. I will say one last thing before maybe Colleen might want to say something about it as well. But
yeah, love that.
You know, you hear a lot of talk about self-worth. So I think Sabbath helps us to remember that our self-worth comes from not producing, not growing a church, not getting all the disciplines right, not working hard and pleasing him, but the self-worth on a day where you kind of don't have to try to do all that stuff is just that you're God's child. Just his child, and you don't have to try to be worthy or earn his favor. He loves you. He died for you just because you're his child. So I think Sabbath kind of helps us to remember that, hey, we can take one day and just be with God, and that's enough.
Yeah, no, that's really great. And I'm both frustrated and freed by your statement of, you know, it's not even about, because I think where I get hung up is I turn the day of Sabbath into a day of working in a Sabbath way, where I'm like, well, if I rest, I better rest the most productively I possibly can. And it's hard. It's just so hard for my brain to break that. Like, I can't fathom a world where a Sabbath doesn't have to be riddled with spiritual disciplines and laden with that. Like, I just can't imagine God being happy with that Sabbath, which is a brokenness in my own heart to go, oh, I'm still attaching a mindset of having to be productive to ascertain or attain God's worth in my life. That's crazy.
Well, that was part one of our conversation with Alan and Colleen Schaberg. I am so excited to jump back in next week as Colleen picks up where we left off and shares her thoughts about Sabbath. In the meantime, as always, we hope that you are encouraged, challenged, and inspired. It really is our goal to bring you resources that are not just spoken to the Rural Church, but are spoken by the Rural Church. So we are so glad that you jumped in for this conversation. As always, you can find this podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcast or our website, www.ruraladvancement.com. I have been your host, Joe Epley. This is part one of Alan and Colleen Schaberg, and we will see you next week.